It's been a little while since we've had Ellen Brown on. EllenBrown.com is her website, and she's a prolific writer, fairly prolific. And her new book is what we're mainly going to discuss, Banking on the People. And it's probably long overdue, I would say, but we're being forced to have this discussion now more than ever. What are we transitioning to? Certainly the Fed is talking about some kind of transition. Certainly other people like Ellen have certain ideas. Ellen is a trade lawyer from California, Berkeley. And she's going to be here and talk about her new book, Banking on the People. Excited to have her. Ellen, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Thanks. Great to talk to you.
How did a lawyer turn into a banking expert?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I did commercial law for 10 years in Los Angeles, and we did represent some banks. But then my ex-husband burned out on Beverly Hills Law and decided she wanted to go in the Foreign Service. So we went abroad for 11 years, and we have two kids. And so that gave me a chance to write. And at first I wrote on alternative health care, which is what I'd written my law review article on, legal restrictions on unorthodox medical treatment in California. And then eventually I wound up representing an alternative cancer therapist in Tijuana. And in the course of that, seeing the trial, and it just looked totally, it was totally corrupt.
And was the trial in Mexico or United States?
It was actually in Texas, Brownsville, Texas.
Okay.
And the jury was, selected from Brownsville people who were not very savvy on medical issues, and they easily succumbed to the government's arguments. But I thought that Jimmy Keller was his name, and I interviewed all his patients. They all just loved him, thought he was doing, he really did have a remarkable record. He said, I want a jury of my peers, which would be a jury of doctors, because they would be able to recognize what great results he had. But anyway, in the course of that, I could see that the pharmaceutical industry and the banking industry were the same thing. I mean, it went back to a Rockefeller cartel, and that if you really wanted to fix the problem, you really had to fix the banking problem. It was through money that they got their power, and that if we wanted to get the power back, we needed to get the power to create our own money back. And to right now, our money is issued by banks. Most people don't realize that. Most people think it's the government that issues the money. But in fact, well over 90% of the money supply is created by banks when they make loans. The Bank of England has acknowledged that, I think, because they got a lot of pressure from the money reformers over many years. So they are creating the money supply. We know the Federal Reserve is creating trillions of dollars, but they're using it to usurp the banks and the financialized economy, the stock market, the big corporate interests. They are not using it for us. So we need to turn the whole system into a public utility, and that's basically what I wrote about in that book. That's my third book on banking.
There's right at the beginning in the introduction, one of my favorite quotes. I love to use this so many times, and I want to know why you chose it for the beginning of your book. It's from the Declaration of Independence. All experience has shown that mankind is more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Why did you include that?
Well, that was in the Declaration of Independence. And Jefferson went on to say, now we're at the point where they're not really sufferable anymore, and we really have to change our system. And that is where we are today. And when I wrote that, it was a year ago, or when it was published, it was a year ago. And even then, we had all sorts of revolutions going on around the world, or protests, people objecting to their current money system and wanting some change. And now it's blatantly obvious that we're at the edge of some sort of major change in our money system. The globalists, as they're called, or whoever you want to call them, used to be the Rothschild Rockefeller cartel, then it became the New World Order, and now all of a sudden it's called the Great Reset. But they're pushing for changing the whole global system in the direction of a one world government and one world currency, and that we all have to follow in lockstep. But the problem is these will not be elected representatives. These will be unelected bureaucrats, technocrats that are doing, you know, they're appointed because of their alleged expertise. But anyway, they're not representing us. So
And the connection, they're appointed because they're connections too, because they're friends of, you know, whatever, the banks or whatever. Why is it not sufferable anymore?
Today?
Yeah.
This whole pandemic, it's, as it's often called, is destroying our global economy. And whether that was the argument is that this is due to a virus, but there is certainly plenty of evidence that it's being manipulated for the use of the big moneyed interests. And they are planning to change our system. So we definitely need to get in there and make sure that the changes are in the direction of serving the public and serving our local businesses, our local economy. We really have two economies, and right now the money power is being used to serve the financialized economy at the expense of the real economy. It's exploiting the real economy. It's a parasite on the real economy.
Well, go into more that those two economies, or people who are listening, define those so in people so they can understand a little better.
Okay, so the real economy is where products are sold, consumers, it's the consumer producer economy. So it's what you call the Main Street economy. And the financialized economy is money making money. They don't really produce anything. It's the stock market. People think that if they put their money in the stock market, they're actually helping business, but they're not. That if you buy stocks, you're buying it from the previous seller of the stock. The money does not go to that company. So it really is a giant casino, and the people who are in the know manage to exploit these crises, you know, booms and busts. They know when it's going to bust. And so they have money kept on the sidelines, and then they can buy up all the distressed houses, foreclosed homes, etc., and rent them back to the people that used to live them in them at inflated prices. And that's the cycle that we keep going through that's called the business cycle or the boom and bust cycle. But we don't have to have that, but it's a function of how our money system works. I could go into that in more detail, but naturally.
Well, let me ask. Yes, let's do. But let me ask you one question about producer and consumer before we get off this. When I think of producer consumer in America, traditionally, I mean, that's been like a farmer. To me, the ultimate producer in America is a farmer. That's where you eat. That's where the rubber meets the road in this country. And I've always been puzzled. The farmers have all the power. They are the ones that actually produce something. The farmer, you know, the banks are not out there growing, you know, corn, even non-GMO corn. They're not doing it. The farmer is. But the farmer then gets manipulated by the banking and the middleman interest to where the farmer gets marginalized and all their crops get derivatized to where they're manipulated and controlled by the financial. I've always been so puzzled. Why don't the producers, why don't these farmers get together and tell all these little parasites just to get lost? I've always wondered that. It's kind of a metaphor for America, really. But anyway, any comment about that?
Yeah, well, farmers have a big lobby, but they are the agribusiness, and those are the ones that are taking over the little farmers. We do have a very good model in North Dakota in 1919 when the farmers were being, they were in their own sort of depression, and they were losing their farms to the big out-of-state banks. And so they got together, did have a revolution, and set up their own public bank, the Bank of North Dakota. So that's our one and only state-owned bank. It's been around for 100 years. It's an excellent model. And they manage through that to keep their money in the state. Right now what happens is the big banks are in Wall Street or generally out of state. And so your money goes to them, but it doesn't come back. They don't reinvest in our local communities. So we really need our own public banks to invest in our communities.
Well, okay, explain here. Okay, another one of the quotes that you have in your book is you start getting into the chapters. And I love this quote, and I want you to explain this. We are completely dependent upon the commercial banks. Someone has to borrow every dollar we have in circulation, cash, or credit. If the banks create ample synthetic money, we are prosperous. If not, we starve. Robert Hemphill, credit manager of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. That was from 1934. Explain that, and how does that relate to what we're talking about here?
Yeah, that was in the Great Depression. And then and now, banks create money when they make loans. Most people think that they lend their deposits, but they don't. They actually just write the loan money into the account. And that when the borrower pays their seller, whatever, let's say it was for a mortgage or for a house, the borrower pays the seller. If the seller's in another bank, that's when the first bank has to come up with liquidity to cover the loan. But if they have deposits coming in equal to their deposits going out, then the books balance and they don't really have to do anything. So they're really sort of recycling borrowed money. Well, anyway, so imagine this example. Say you have Bank A creates a $500,000 mortgage. The $500,000 check goes into Bank B. Now, technically, Bank A should come up with $500,000. But if Bank B, at the same time, creates a mortgage for $500,000 and the check finds its way into Bank A, they both have $500,000 coming in, $500,000 going out, their books balance, and they don't have to do anything. But $1 million is now out there that wasn't there before. That money is circulating in the economy. It can be spent. And that's where our money comes from. So money is created and destroyed all day, every day. People think of it as being a fixed sum that the government maybe issues or the central bank issues. And we have to worry about, you know, if you have the government issue some extra, maybe that'll be inflationary. But we've got inflation going on all the time. And right now we have deflation going on, radical shrinking of the money supply.
You said something that I don't know if people understand. I think it's extremely important. Are you familiar with the Walker Todd affidavit where
I remember it. I wrote about it, but it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, basically he was in court. I think it was in Minneapolis. I think it was in Minnesota, I believe. But the judge in that case ended up getting killed. I mean, that's how serious this was. And see, now I'm trying to remember the details.
I think it was about the banks creating money, right?
Right. It was a mortgage. Yeah. It was a mortgage lawsuit. They had somebody that was high up in the banks and they got him on the stand to ask him, well, how is money created? And in affidavit form, he says exactly what you said. Well, does the bank loan the money? No. Does the bank come up with the money? No. Well, how is the money created? Well, when the people sign the mortgage, as soon as they sign the mortgage, that triggers and then the money is created out of thin air with their signature on the bank. So then the bank is a third party. It's a third party investment contract that the bank is a custodian of. The bank has no interest in the game. Okay. When they said that, the judge let this all go and the judge was killed. Walker Todd affidavit, you can look it up. This was a few years ago. It was easy to find. Now, like a lot of things, it's hard to find on the internet. I mean, the amount of censorship and scrubbing this information is difficult. Explain to people again, let's not gloss over this. People think when they go to borrow our money to go buy their car, they go to the bank. Please explain this. The bank is not loaning them money. Please make that clear to people. And what are they doing?
Okay. When you sign a mortgage, the bank is basically guaranteeing your own credit. So if you tried to write an IOU out to the seller, that the seller's not going to take it because they don't know you and they don't know how to, you know,
Who are you? Right, whatever.
So you go to the bank and the bank will take your IOU. That's what the mortgage is. It's a promise to pay over time, like 30 years plus interest. They'll take it because you're going to pay them some interest. They know where to find you. They've got the collateral of the house if you don't pay. So they're sitting pretty. So they're happy to take your IOU. So really the bank is turning your IOU into something that you can spend in the marketplace. And so really the bank is a guarantor of your own. So you yourself are really creating the money. It's really your credit is now turned into something fungible that you can spend, which is actually a good thing. I mean, it's like a community currency where money is created when two people want to trade and it's extinguished when all the obligations are paid off and money comes and goes like that. And that's really what our banking system is. But the problem is that the banks, they wind up with the collateral, they get the interest, and they really aren't doing anything but stepping in as guarantor. I mean, right now they're protected a dozen different ways. The central bank will loan the money for 0.25%, like almost nothing. Right now the banks are able to go to the discount window at the Fed for almost nothing to get the liquidity they need to back these loans. They can sell their bad loans to the central bank now that the central bank has set up all these special purpose vehicles. All of this supposedly because of this pandemic, but actually the banks have been in trouble ever since 2008. They never really fixed that. And there was, the whole system would have collapsed in September if the Federal Reserve hadn't stepped in and started backstopping the repo market. So that's the thing. The government is always backstopping this system. The banks are not really taking the risk. We, the people, are taking the risk, and the person who signs the mortgage is on the hook, of course, for the payments. And if he doesn't pay, nowadays Fannie and Freddie does backs practically all the mortgages. That's a government agency, which we, the people, are on the hook for. So that's how it came about, but it's gotten to the point where we have a public-private system where the public bears all the liability and the private
gets all the benefit.
Gets all the benefit. Yeah.
All right. Let me describe this in maybe another way. You correct me if I'm wrong. So basically a bank, if I have a charter, if I have a license, so if I'm licensed by the Federal Reserve System, that I can then go loan money. So you come to me and you want to borrow $1 million for whatever business, $100,000 for a house. Let's keep it simple. So you sign, you qualify by certain standards that are created through the system. Basically the government approves this qualifications. So then your ingenuity, your blood, sweat and tears, everything that you've been given by your creator is basically on the hook to now justify the government, then the Federal Reserve System printing into existence $100,000 for you to borrow that money. The bank becomes the intercessory, just like the farmers and the markets, these middlemen. The bank becomes the intermediary where they go to the Federal Reserve. They get the $100,000 at 0.25%. They charge you, oh, look, mortgage rates are 4% or 3%. Whatever. Look how low they are. Well, they're not near as low as what they're getting. So the public's already being cut out. And so then the money comes into existence. Now the intermediary, the bank, has a financial interest in your failure, because by the good faith and credit of the United States government and your God-given ingenuity and ability to create with that, they just leverage this whole system to be able to collateralize this house. So the bank is the one who owns this house, and they did not put up one damn thin dime. Correct? Is that correct?
Correct.
Dear God. Dear God, this is a scam. Okay. So then.
Well, it used to be that the banks really were liable, like in It's a Wonderful Life, you know, with Jimmy Stewart. But since then, we put in so many protections for the banks that they really have no risk.
Okay. And so.
Can I just say one thing?
Sure, please. We got 2 minutes for the break, so go ahead.
Okay. In 2008, you know, we money reformers, well, different people were saying the next time this happens, we need to put some liabilities on the bank, you know, make them serve the public interest in some way, or even maybe nationalize the public banks, you know, instead of bailing them out scot-free with no strings attached, we need to give them some conditions. But in this time around, because of this alleged virus pandemic situation, the Fed has bailed out the banks without any say-so from Congress. The Fed just stepped in and say, okay, we're going to change the system, and now we're going to let any bank borrow from our discount window at 0.25%. It used to be that banks wouldn't go there because there was a penalty attached. So they've protected the banks without Congress having to even get in there and bail them out. The Fed is just doing it with their deep pocket of liquidity.
So the Federal Reserve, kind of just like this quote by Robert Hemphill, we are completely dependent. Someone has to borrow every dollar. If the banks create money, we are prosperous. If not, we're starved. So they have a financial interest in your failure. So they do better if you fail. If the government's going to backstop them, which they did in 2008, they have done. It's obvious that they're just backstopping them to infinity, or seems like infinity. They have an interest. They'll circulate money to get the housing prices way up, get mortgage way high. Then they can literally contract money, stop giving the loans. The prices of the house go down. The whole economy gets crashed basically by their efforts, by their just a press of a button or a decision. And now when it's all said and done, when the dust's all settled, the person that owns the bank is this bank who sits in the middle, who caused all the problem by the inflating, deflating of currency back and forth and just using you as a pawn and the whole system and just stealing what God has given us to create. That's basically what's going on. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Booms and busts. That is the business cycle. And it was very blatantly obvious in the 19th century when we were on a gold standard and the banks got rid of the silver standard. In order to, you know, it used to be a bimetal standard. Well, I don't want to go into it long, but anyway, it used to be that like in the second half of the 19th century, the banks so shrank the money supply that all these homes went into foreclosure. And that's how they took over all these properties.
My great grandma, I'll tell the story when I get back. My great grandmother, she was born in the 1890s. And I'll tell you what she used to say about banks. We're talking to Ellen Brown, ellenbrown.com, Banking on the People. I think this is a very important, if nothing else, reference book. I mean, your children need to know this. They're not learning anything at school. I mean, keep them home and let them just read this book, Banking on the People, ellenbrown.com. Stay tuned.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
What in the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution, and it's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard Water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were drinking, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soils. I think we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877- 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
If you eat your man of food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Power Silver. We're really excited about this Power Silver. You can see that it's not a huge thing. Like you don't need a ton of it because the delivery system, there is no delivery system in the world like this on the silver. It works totally different. As you can see, to go into the cells and into the actual cell membrane and be able to penetrate and be able to do what it does. The FDA told me, I have to say, it does nothing. You shouldn't get it. It's inert. Don't ever buy this. Whatever you do, don't buy this.
I haven't bought it. But when I tried it, it did absolutely nothing.
It does nothing
does
for
nothing.
You. You don't want
but
this.
I have
don't
to take
call.
It every day.
Yeah. Whatever you do, do not buy the Power Silver.
Because I don't want to catch any cooties.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah, the Power Silver at thepowermall.com.
Cooties aren't regulated by the FDA.
Yeah, that's true. It stops cooties.
It stops cooties, exactly. Right.
My uncle says that it stops cooties.
Yep. So,
that's a purely medical technical term.
Exactly.
Phosphatidyl choline, of course, Sherry Rogers, and I just got this. We go through this pretty good, like I said last hour, and the detox cocktail. You want a detox? Simple. It tastes good. Wait, the detox cocktail is super good. Of course, we got multivitamins grown by nature. If you're not getting it from us, where are you getting them? Because they're not in the soil anymore. The cardio support. Okay, this is my second shot. I'm supposed to do this 3 times a day. So this is my second shot today. We're going to do the cardio support. Now, the heart drops are a little harsh.
They can are. Be. I agree.
I get to where I like them. My body almost like craze them at times.
Yeah, I could see that, but they are harsh. Yeah,
I mean, it's a slap in the face.
Yes.
Okay, but they are the most profound product that we – they must be good. Anything that's that strong must be good. Yeah. It's like Smuckers. With a name like that, it has to be good.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So there, you just put it under the tongue like that, let it sit for about 30 seconds. You want some too?
Yeah, sure.
There you go. Take it. Or pass it around. Ellen, if you were here, you could have some too.
Thanks.
We got the vitamin D, of course. You have to have vitamin D if you want to fight infection. That's you have to, according to Sherry Rogers. And the kidney support. We have kidney support and the heart drops at the Power Mall, many other things. Just let it sit there like that and then to swallow.
They're still sitting.
Still sitting. Mm-hmm. Well, I got to do an interview here, it can't sit anymore. We're back to we do have a caller, Dave and the Thumb. We'll just hang on a second, Dave. We're gonna get a couple things, and then we'll get to your questions. So just hang on if you can. Ellen Brown, the book is Banking on the People. Banking on the People. EllenBrown.com. She just, what a charming lady she is. And she looks so lovely in her outfit. She's always worried about how she looks. She looks fantastic on the video. If you can see it on her YouTube channel. Okay. Let me briefly ask you. Okay. What was life like in America banking wise before Federal Reserve when we had gold and silver or combination or whatever? What was banking like?
Well, there were different phases of banking. In the 19th century, we were in a depression, and then we had the Civil War, and Lincoln issued money directly. He issued greenbacks. He actually doubled the money supply, which should have created something like hyperinflation, but it didn't. I mean, there was some inflation, but that was because it was wartime. There's always inflation in wartime. But meanwhile, with that money, he managed to win the Civil War and to not go into debt to the British bankers at 30%, which was what he was being threatened with. And we built the Transcontinental Railroad and did all sorts of development. The college system came into existence then, and you had the homesteaders who got 1,600 acres. My grandfather was one of those in Pennsylvania. Great, 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 great grandfather. Somebody then, you know. Anyway, Then, of course, Lincoln was shot. Then the greenbacks were recalled or withdrawn, or that program was stopped anyway. And we had been on a bimetal system where the banks could back the dollars with silver or gold. Everybody knew at that time that banknotes were just the promissory notes of the bank. They weren't the national currency. They said right on it, the name of the bank, and you could take that note and redeem it for a certain amount of silver or gold. But the banks would periodically get into trouble because they issued way more notes than they had gold. That's the fractional reserve system where they knew they could issue 10 times as many notes as they had gold because most people left their money in the bank. They didn't want to come for their gold because it was unsafe to carry around, and they just, you know, they wanted to save it. But periodically, people would find out that the bank was untrustworthy, and then they'd all rush to get their money. I guess there were bank runs every 6 years on average all through the 19th century. But then the bankers withdrew silver in, I think it was 1873. It was called the Crime of 73. This is all in the Wizard of Oz, symbolized in the Wizard of Oz. And I did my first book on this subject called Web of Debt. I used the Wizard of Oz for a pattern.
Well, in the original book, Dorothy's slippers were not ruby. They were silver.
Right, right.
That's right. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So after 1873, we went into a Great Depression that was almost as bad as the Great Depression of the 1930s. And so the farmers and the factory workers, factory workers all got together and formed a populist movement. And that was actually the theme of the Wizard of Oz, if you care. So because they marched all the way from Ohio to Washington, D.C., trying to get the government to return to Lincoln's greenback system, which failed. They were rejected at the gates. But that was the original greenback movement. And then that became the silver movement of of William Jennings Bryan of the populists. And he was the closest to come to a third party win of the presidency, but he didn't win, of course. And he represented the opposition against the Federal Reserve Act. And he said no way was he going to allow the big bankers, to allow Wall Street to have control of our money system or in the creation of our money. But it was so obscurely written when they wrote the Federal Reserve Act that he thought that the government actually did, you know, it was the government that was going to be issuing the money, which it wasn't. And so he actually endorsed it and got behind this act. Yeah, it was all done under cover of darkness the day before Christmas. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask you about Andrew Jackson. You know, that's one of the most famous things of the 19th century any president did. was on his deathbed. I killed the banks, but I got those banks. I may be dead, but I got those banks. what did he do when he did? Because I'm of the opinion that that was a heroic act and an amazing thing that he did. Your thoughts about that?
Well, you can see it both ways. Before that, we had the first U.S. bank and then the second U.S. bank. And the second U.S. bank was definitely corrupt, and he shut it down. But the problem was that was government-issued money. I mean, government-issuing paper money. They were called U.S. notes. And after that, we had no national banking system until the National Bank Act, which was also corrupted, and you know, Lincoln issued money directly. But we did go into a depression after that, because since he shut down the banks, or the central bank, the money supply shrank. And that was a problem. People didn't really, I don't think, understand so well where money came from then, or that, you know, you needed the banks to be issuing this extra paper money, because there really wasn't enough money in the system to cover all productivity. And even today,
I hate interrupting you, but why is there not enough money in the system? If gold and silver is a finite amount and there's not enough, then, you know, a loaf of bread will just be cheaper than the buying power of a, so why is there not enough money with gold? I hear this argument all the time. Why is gold and silver not enough? Why isn't everything just cheaper?
Because businesses can't go backwards. In other words, they've got all these contracts. Their workers are not going to take less. They can't. In fact, businesses don't even know how much money.
Well, that's now. That's now. I'm talking about, you know, 150 years ago or whatever. Why wouldn't there be enough money?
Well, let's say in the 1930s when we were on the gold standard, businesses still have to pay their workers. And if there's just not enough money around, they don't have the money to pay the workers. And the workers are not going to say, okay, boss, I agree, I'll take half as much money. Because maybe the grocer is going to charge me less. I mean, they don't just all back down their prices like that.
And the Federal Reserve called in the gold and silver. I mean, FDR famously took in all the gold.
Yeah. Well, that was, yeah, we could argue about that. Well, going to fiat currency was actually necessary. I think a fiat currency is good. The problem is that too could be corrupted, as we have right now, where it's all in control of the financialized economy and the real economy is not getting our fair share, our half of it.
All right, we got a caller, David and Thumb. He's got a question for you. He's been waiting patiently. Thank you so much for waiting, Dave. Dave, what's your question?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't muted. Sorry about that. No, great. It's really great information, and I appreciate that. You know, we are in a quite unprecedented times right now. And, Daniel, if you could give me a little time after your guest, I don't want to interrupt what she's talking about. I don't have a question for her, but I do have an invitation. You and I have been trying to, you know, get together on this assembly, right? Trump said we got to assemble. And we have a national-assembly.net website that everybody needs to look at, but I'd love to talk about it if we got a few minutes after your guest. I want to listen to what she's got to say and teach me about real money.
Why don't you call in in the news or something when we don't have a guest? Call in when we got news. We can talk about it as long as you want.
Yeah, when is that?
Well, it was the first hour today. Let's see. I'm looking on the schedule. Call tomorrow. Well, we got Robert Redfern. It looks like Friday.
Well,
Friday
Thursday,
we got news.
Let me say this real quick, because I'd like, if your listeners, you know, we don't have anybody in Missouri, that are assembling, and we have this national call every Thursday night.
Dave, this is important. I want to hear it. I have my own thoughts. There's reasons I have, you know, and I want to give you proper time. I don't want to get in on Ellen. So let's talk about, I thought you had a question for Ellen. So let's talk about this.
I didn't know. I heard you online. You know, you were live, so I called in, you know.
All Okay, good. Well, call me when you got news, and let's go over this, because I want to go back and forth in that discussion. So that'd be great.
Can you call Can you call me after the show?
If you text me, text me, I will.
I will. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Dave. God bless you.
All right.
Sorry about that, Ellen. I thought he was going to have a question for you. Say that again, Todd. Oh, Sherry in Kansas. Okay, Sherry in Kansas, do you have a question for Ellen?
Yes. Ellen, is it not true that with all this money that the Federal Reserve is creating and giving the banks without congressional approval or anything, that the U.S. taxpayers are still liable for that goes on the federal debt?
Great question.
According to...
Go ahead, Al.
No, they're not. So that's a good thing. It's the central bank just creates the money. It's on their books. And so the banks, well, this is kind of a long story. So in 2008, before 2008, banks borrowed from each other in the Fed funds market. And then after 2008, when the banks collapsed, the banks didn't trust each other. And so they quit borrowing the Fed funds market. That's where... all banks have always had this problem of liquidity. They don't really have the money. They're actually pretending to lend money they don't have. And then they have to scramble around and find the money somewhere. So it used to be they would borrow it overnight from each other at the Fed funds market and then give it back in the morning. And then they'd do that over and over. And then the Fed funds market collapses.
A shell game. Basically a shell game. They're moving back and forth.
Exactly. It's unbelievable that... they like in the repo market, that's what they do, is that they put it up, you put up collateral overnight, and then you qualify, you satisfy the requirements in the evening, you know, your book's balanced, and then you give the money back during the day, and you get your collateral back. And that's it. They do that over and over. So they're double counting the same money. And so that's the thing. The Fed funds market was faulty, and then they went to the repo market, which is even worse. It's totally private, and the repo market collapsed in September of 2019 when the banks quit lending there, and also the Fed, the money market funds quit going there and stuff because the hedge funds had taken it over and they didn't want to risk it. So there's different reasons, but anyway, you've always got this problem of liquidity and borrowing short to lend long, you know, the same Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life problem, where he's borrowing credit that he promises to give back today, but he just made a 30-year loan out of that money. So how do you do that? Really, what we need is to have a central bank that actually works for the people, that actually is the deep pocket, where really what you need is to just be able to guarantee your own credit, you know, say.
Explain how that works. In your plan, in your book, Banking on the People, ellenbrown.com, explain that. What are you advocating?
Okay, so I would advocate a public bank or a central bank that actually is a public utility, actually there to serve the people, and that if we need to borrow money, in other words, we write out our IOU, and it's the central bank that guarantees it, which is actually what they're doing now, because they are stepping up and making their free liquidity available to the banks to lend to us. But what do we need those private middlemen for if it's the central bank that's putting up the money in the first place? We don't even need them to guarantee the deposits that are being lent, because it's no longer deposits. It's just this pool of liquidity that the central banks create on their books. So that would actually be a good thing if it were working for us. If you had a whole network of public banks, which is what, you know, I'm chairman of the Public Banking Institute, and that's what we're working on, is trying to get every state to have a state-owned bank like North Dakota has. If you had a network of public banks where you would know your local banker, just like now, it's not like the central bank would actually be your banker, but they would all have access to this infinite pool of liquidity, which just means the government is going to back your loan if you can show all the things, you know, you show the government how you're going to pay it back or whatever, just like it is now. But we don't need private shareholders and $20 million CEOs and, you know, middlemen.
Okay. My immediate question on this, okay, say the government is doing that. I can see a scenario where, well, you didn't get your vaccine, so you don't qualify. So one of the things that you have to qualify for is you have to get your vaccine instead of having.
Terrifying.
Well, I could see that really easy. If it's central, if the power to orchestrate money now is in the government. See, Andrew Jackson, to me, I get what you're saying about liquidity, whatever, but he fractionalized. But I want banking fractionalized. Why can't me and Uncle Kevin start a bank here in Dexter? Why can't, you know, whatever? Because then the power, this is such an insidious problem that then the power is reduced. When you say on the national level, they're going to give back the money. Now they can set all the parameters for it.
Well, there's no reason you couldn't have private banks as well, but private banks should not be creating money on their books. That's the difference. Private banks.
Well, then how can they compete then? How can they ever compete?
They'd be loan funds. They'd actually take in money of people who want to lend their money out, you know, but they know that it's going to be gone for 10 years or else they have to at least sell their interest to somebody else. In other words, they know that they can't have their money on demand because it's a loan fund. I think there are countries in Europe that actually do that. And we certainly have loan funds of different sorts.
All right. Then let me ask you that. This is a great question, by the way, Sherry. Thank you for the call. Uncle Kevin and I have been going back and forth for a while. Explain to her what you want to do here.
But I, too, am terrified of the whole mandatory vaccine thing. So I agree with you there. We don't want
Well, I'll just keep using that as an example.
Yeah.
Here, we got about 5 minutes. Go ahead. Let's give your...
Well, I want the banks to pay off every mortgage in America.
Well, the banks don't make the money.
The government.
Okay, whatever.
The Fed.
Okay.
What's your thoughts on
that? That's it. You could have a debt jubilee for mortgages that are issued by banks. And the reason is they only created that money on their books in the first place. In other words, nobody would be hurt. All you have to do is change the banking rules. All you have to do is say, all right, banks, we're going to let you carry those bad debts we're not going to put you in bankruptcy for it. And that's what the Chinese do already. They have all these bad debts and they just don't worry about them. They just carry them.
Okay. I'll tell you who will be hurt. And this is I'm not saying I'm completely against it, but this is not like nobody will be hurt because somebody will be hurt. My grandma and grandpa worked all their life to save to pay for their house. They paid for their house. They're now living on Social Security. If their house is paid for, now their neighbor gets their house, whose mortgage up to the hilt. You just devalued their 30 years worth of effort to pay off their mortgage.
You can make a case like that, but I don't think you wouldn't have devalued the properties. There's no reason that people are going to pay more or less for properties when the mortgage has been paid off, right?
Inflation, and I didn't think so.
Then here's how the inflation comes, because of a lot. When money is not created until you get a loan, so the bank's created out of nothing. And then when you pay your mortgage off, that money doesn't flow to the economy, it just gets extinguished, correct?
Right.
Okay. So in this situation where all the mortgages are paid off, so now somebody has a $1,500 a month mortgage, so now they, sorry, I don't know why my child is down here screaming, I have no idea. They got a $1,500 a month mortgage. Now they have $1,500 more a month in their pocket. So now that is the height of a lot. You are just basically giving somebody $1,500 a month. The velocity of money is extremely strong in that. And now a gallon of milk just went up or whatever. So who gets hurt? Well, my grandma and grandpa whose house is paid off and they're on fixed income with Social Security. That's who gets hurt. That's what I say.
I agree with you. I agree with you there. But I could see doing a moratorium on mortgages right now because of this whole virus situation and say, as long as we've got this pandemic, we're going to pay everybody's salaries that they used to have and we're not going to make you pay your mortgages.
Well, when is it going to end?
Well, when they decide to admit that we don't really have a pandemic and that they're using it for...
They have no job. I mean, half these jobs, they have no job to come home to. You just, with a flip of a switch, you just created dependency on, you know, 50 plus million people, just lost their job. So and a lot of those, they're not going to, even if they turned on the economy, they don't have a job to go back to because they've went under. All the small businesses went under. You just nationalized employment. You just nationalized universal basic income. That's my feeling. And that if you pay off, I think it's better. Here's what I will say. For the government or whatever mechanism they want, for them to pay off all the mortgages is better to me than what they did.
Oh yeah.
That's what I will say. I will say that.
And in California, you know, they've done this renter moratorium. And then now the landlords are complaining and they're saying, well, we have mortgages too, and we can't pay our mortgages because our renters aren't paying us. And right. If it's the bank, you know, we don't feel too bad. But what about the situation like, say, your grandparents, and maybe right. they've rented out their
basement.
Home and yeah. they're living on the rental proceeds, or they're using the rental proceeds to pay their own mortgage, whatever. So that is obviously not fair. But so my argument would be, well, you can fix that by just... You can forgive the mortgages too. If you're going to forgive the rents, forgive the mortgages. And
I can
as long as it's a mortgage with a bank, you're not going to hurt anybody in terms of balancing the books. I mean, there is the issue of inflation, et cetera. I know. I mean, it's sticky.
Inflation would be extremely strong in that case.
Say it again.
There's the music. Turn the music down, Todd. Don't you think that would really, inflation would grow really strong in that case?
I know, because people are not making money otherwise. So. They're not getting money. You know, you're just replacing the money that isn't coming in the ordinary way.
Well, we're having deflation anyway.
Yeah, we have.
Where are we headed? Okay, where are we headed over the next of this money transition? Deflation and then hyperinflation and then a money switch? Is that what you see or what? You got about 10 seconds.
No, I think we have deflation in the real economy because people are not working and they're not getting paid.
Deflation.
So, yeah, deflation. The money supply is shrinking.
Right.
They pay off their debts and they are not taking out new debts. If they don't take out new loans, you have deflation.
All right. We got to go. Stay right there, Ellen. God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow. We clear, Todd?
Probiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.